Hey, this is Steve Balton, and you are here on My Turning Point, where this week, really fun conversation with Lauren Jauregui. And I probably just butchered the hell out of that, and I apologize, Lauren, but didn't butcher the interview. Great conversation with her on finally releasing her debut album, how she's celebrating that debut album, some of the artists she's learned the most from, and so much more. So I hope you enjoy this conversation with Lauren Jauregui as much as we did.
All right, so how was your Halloween?
It was great. I mean, I didn't do anything yesterday, but I did Friday and Saturday. I celebrated.
All right, nice. So what was your costume on Friday and Saturday?
I was a last minute Playboy bunny energy. Like, it was like a French maid corset situation that I put ears on and made something out of nothing kind of energy. And then on Saturday, I was a planned mermaid.
Nice. Okay. So you went both planned and unplanned.
Exactly. What about you?
Now this is an important question.
Okay.
So you do planned, you do unplanned. Which costume got the better response?
Honestly, they both got pretty good responses. I don't know.
But I love that, you know, that you can put all this work in, plan it and everything, and then you just throw something together. And half the time, it's, you know, the thing that you had no plans about that comes out best. So,
yes. Yeah.
What did I do? I didn't do, Friday night I went and saw Nightmare Before Christmas live, which was amazing. I went to the one at Bank of California, which I'm sure you heard about because, you know, Billie Eilish played the part of Sally.
Oh my God.
But, you know, since I grew up in LA, for me to see Danny Elfman back on stage at Halloween was so freaking cool. It's such a, where'd you grow up?
Miami.
Okay. Right. So this is a funny thing. I was discussing this with someone the other day. It's amazing. I'm sure there are certain artists that are regional to Miami that are just rule Miami. And in the rest of the country, if you say them, people are like, who the hell is that?
There's definitely some. But
Long story short, the reason I mentioned Danny Elfman was the lead singer of Oingo Boingo before he became the biggest film composer in the world, working with Tim Burton. In LA, Oingo Boingo, I remember seeing them Halloween weekend, like in the late 80s, because I'm also a little bit older than you, by a year or two. And they sold out 7 nights at the Universal Amphitheater. They could sell 40,000 tickets in LA. And if you asked anybody in the rest of the country who Oingo Boingo was, they're like,
I literally was like, who the fuck is Oingo Boingo?
Yeah, exactly. But in LA, they absolutely ruled. So the long story short, seeing them Halloween was awesome. In terms of dressing up, I took Saturday, Sunday off. Rested. I went the weekend before. My friend Amy, who is also known as Queen Herbie, she and her husband used to be the band Carmen. They did a really fun Halloween party. Kind of dressed up a little bit for that. Drank way too much, and so that was my Saturday Sunday. But now we're, and I live in Long Beach, and they were setting off fireworks. So I was hanging out with my dog and my new rescue cat. So it was not a wild Halloween night, but that's all right.
I love it. Honestly, that's
this is for you now. This has got to be a very exciting week. You know, it's funny. I was thinking about this and, you know, I've talked about this with thousands of artists in terms of record release week. But when it's something that you've been working towards to for a while and you've been talking about it, does the fact that we're finally here, that we're 4 days away, does it almost seem surreal to you in the sense of like, wait, are we actually finally here?
Yeah, it definitely, that's exactly what the fuck it is, actually. That's the exact feeling. It's like, for real? Okay. Like, just like that? Like, this is easy? Like, we just let it go like that? It's because I feel like a mom, you know what I mean? Like, I know that's probably like an insult to mothers because it's a whole nother kind of process. But like, I feel like these are my children that are coming out of me and that are about to be released into the world. And there's this like sense of calm readiness intertwined with this sense of disbelief, intertwined with this like, light nervousness, you know?
Yeah. That's funny. You know, it's so funny that you say that about like, oh, it's probably this. Look, man, you know, there are some people who consider their pets their babies. I'm one of those people. There are some people, I've talked to so many artists who talk about songs being like children. So no, it's not disrespectful at all. It's funny. And I think as an artist too, you're so like, look, every artist is a perfectionist. So it's so hard to know when is the right time to actually let it go. So for you, how did you finally know that, okay, November 5th, 2021, that's the date. That's the date that I'm ready to give birth.
To be honest, I don't even know if it was like a decision like that. Like if I was like, I decided this. It was like, I finally signed with AWOL as my distribution company. And it was like the one that, the time that made sense because everything was ready, you know, like I had already finished everything. I was in master mode and just like getting the final touches on the masters and in my like 20th mix of a song. and just getting that done, you know, and it was ready. So why not, you know, was the question.
Now it's funny for you because, okay, when did you actually start working on the record?
I started in 2018.
Okay. The reason I asked that, this is so fascinating, right? You start in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
And now it is 3 years later. We've gone through a global pandemic. The whole world seems to have shifted 86 times in the last 3 years. So have these songs changed a great deal for you? Or are there songs that you now hear differently than you did when you started working on them in 2018?
Yeah. So this is what's interesting about these songs is that even though I've grown past the woman I was in them, or rather like I've grown into the woman I am now from the, I think, still girl I was then, you know, they still stand the test of time to me. Like they still resonate with very human feelings that people are still definitely going through and feeling. I think that's one of the beauties about being so honest in my work is that like it I'm speaking to like universal truths, like human truths, you know, that we all go through in our own ways. And I think that's one of the most beautiful things about music, is getting to express and then having other people resonate with your expression. It's like they've taken on different lives. They mean different things now. Like they're applicable to other relationships, some of them, like they, you know what I'm saying? Like they have their own lives, which I think is really cool personally. But they're still the same structurally. I just embellished them and made them more complete than they were when I wrote them.
No, it makes sense. And it's interesting because look, you hear things differently as you grow and change. And I talk about this with artists all the time too. It comes into being a fan as well. You can hear stuff and you hear it when you're like 6 years old and you're like, oh, that's a cool song. And then you hear it 20 years later. And you're like, oh shit, I never knew that meant that, but that's awesome. So are there songs for you? And before we come back onto the record, I'm curious if there are songs for you that as a fan, you hear differently as like you say, you know, these are songs that grew from the girl that you were into the woman you are now. But that also applies to songs as fans. And I think for every great song, what makes a great song is it has a universality that can carry over throughout your life. It changes 100%. As you hear it.
100%. I think The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, like that album, is one of those albums for me where like I heard some of the songs when I was younger and they were bops and like I loved the songs, but I had it really connected to the full project. And then when I was like 19 or 18, I think was when I heard that full project top to bottom for the first time, which is like blasphemous to say, but I did. And it changed my life because I was like, whoa, like the way that she connects to her lyric and the way that she connects to her message and conveys it, like that is so inspiring, you know? And so like, it, like that's her album and it, I could still listen to that top to bottom every day. You know what I'm saying? Like it's still relevant and it's still, as I grow through life, the songs grow with me, you know? As I learn more about myself as a woman, I think that would be that. And I hope my project can do that for people too, you know?
So what for your project though, for what are the songs for you that particularly grow with you or that have changed? Because again, exactly, that's what I was getting as an artist, right? You change, you hear something different, you feel it differently. You know, you like this Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, you hear it when you're 5 years old or 10 years older. Look, I hosted a podcast where you're talking about protest songs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I would use examples like Marvin Gaye, What's Going On, Stevie Wonder, Living in the City. You hear those songs when you're 10 years old and you're like, dude, that sounds cool. Then you hear it when you're an adult and you realize how significant and the message of those songs, and you don't even notice the message of the song when you're a kid, but then you get older and you can put it in context of the world and how fucked up things are. Exactly. And you understand what it is they're talking about.
100%. Yeah. I think falling is like that. And I think colors is like that. Cause they're just like explorations of self and like dealing with, kind of like the downs of life and moving through them in some sort of in deep vulnerability, but like trying to find the strength in that. So I think that thematically, I feel like is something that continues to mean different things to me as I get older.
So by the way, let's talk about Scattered for a second too, because I've interviewed Vic like 3 or 4 times. So how'd that one come about? And like, you know, it's interesting because obviously as a first record, you really want something, as a first solo record, you want mm-hmm. something that reflects who you are right now, but also who you are as an individual. So anybody that you're going to work with, I imagine it's got to be someone that you feel sort of reflects your vibe as an artist in 2021.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So what was it about Vic that made that the right fit, and how'd you guys come together?
Yeah, so Scattered was a song that I wrote with, I wrote and Oak produced like probably 2019, I think was when we wrote, definitely 2019, we wrote that one. And I just sonically really wanted to invoke that, like, that unresolved tension inside of myself of like, I don't feel like myself and I'm asking for help, you know? And that's why the chord changes happen the way that they do. And they're very like eerie and they kind of take you into like a little bit of an uncomfortable place on it, like ear wise. And I think, yeah, I think Vic is an amazing fit because he is so honest in his expression as well, lyrically, you know? And he talks very openly about his struggles with mental health. And I think his perspective is important, especially in a time like this where we're all coming to terms with the fact that we are walking around this globe like emotionless, fucking disconnected beings, refusing to connect to ourselves and each other because we're all so scared all the time. And like, I think that Vic does a really good job of communicating that. And I think that that's what the song was communicating. And so, yeah, he just bodied it.
That's so interesting for you. I mean, as someone who, look, you get to be around so many people, you interact with so many. Well, okay, pre-COVID, you got to be around with so many people, see so many different people. So it's always fascinating when I talk to musicians who travel the globe. And, you know, I remember talking with Henry Rollins from Black Flag years ago. And, well, I say Black Flag, but obviously, you know, he's done all his spoken word stuff and all that. And, you know, about his experiences going to the Middle East and uh-huh. how they would be so different from what everybody in America imagined them to be. Uh-huh. And so it's very interesting, though, what you say about everybody being emotionless and scared. I mean, you know, talk about them when you put out an album that's vulnerable, the response that you're seeing to it. And when you put out a song like Colors, and, you know, as soon as you say emotionless and vulnerable, I think of like Joni Mitchell Blue. I think of like that album that's designed to just smack everybody in the face and be like, bitch, wake up.
Literally, I love that album.
So for you, how has the response been to the fact that, you know, you kind of, in a way, you're calling people out because by making yourself vulnerable at a time when everybody doesn't freaking know how to, like, you know, talk, or I say, you know, talk, but you know what I mean?
Communicate. They don't know how to communicate their feelings.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of people don't know how to communicate their feelings. And I think that, you know, there's some artists who explore that complexity, and then there's artists who ignore that complexity and just make stuff that they think other people will like. And I think that that's obvious when you listen, you know what I'm saying? And I think that putting out these songs is just, these are the songs that resonate with me. And I think my only intention for them is that they resonate with others in the same kind of way that they are cathartic for me to get out of myself, that they're cathartic for people to listen to and maybe connect with themselves a little more.
So that's interesting as well, because, right, I always talk about this with people all the time. Writing is subconscious. Good writing is subconscious. It mm-hmm. leads itself. You go into it, then you come out of it and you're like, fuck, I didn't even know I was thinking that. So yeah, are there moments literally on the album that surprised you when you go back and hear them?
Yeah, Sorry is definitely one of those for me. And yeah, I mean, all of them, like, but I think Colors is also one of those for me. Like, when I listen to it, sometimes I listen to it when I'm in a place of like completely past that space of doubt. And then other times I listen to it like right when I'm in one of those deepest pits of the doubt. And I hear it and I'm like, whoa, wait, no, like we have to pull ourselves out of this. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's one of those. Yeah. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, no, absolutely. But it's interesting. So how, when you think of those moments that surprise you on this record, mm-hmm. you know, like what were the things about it specifically, like Sorry, for example, that surprised you, that when you go back and hear it, you hear it and you're like, oh, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, I think of just like that exploration of I'm sorry, I can't love you anymore. Was like that, is like, I wouldn't say surprised. It was just more like, wow, this is applicable to so many of the relationships that I've been in, you know, where like we feel like we can't love people the right way. And so because we can't love them the right way, quote unquote, essentially the way that they need to be loved, then we're like less valuable in a relationship. You know what I'm saying? Like that we're not able to have these feelings and still live in the both and of love does exist here, even though it's not what we both need, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, when you think of those artists who, I mentioned Joni Mitchell and you said you love that record. When you think of those artists, and you mentioned Lauryn Hill, but are there one or two songs that for you sort of become a template for being able to just open yourself up? And when you look at being vulnerable in music, and it's, I mean, I think it's such an awesome thing too, because there are certain artists who do it well, and there are certain contemporary artists who do it well. And like, for example, I actually have a great deal of respect for Taylor Swift. I'm a huge yeah. Adele fan.
I also have SZA and Summer Walker, like the two of them and the way, and her, like the way that they express themselves in their songwriting is really, really, really spectacular, I think.
Yeah. No, that's cool. I think it's also, it's always an interesting thing, right? Because they're, of course, the records that you grow up listening to. But I talk about this with a lot of artists as well. And there's something to be said also for having contemporary artists that inspire you at the same time. And I don't know if you've gotten to hang out with them or meet them or if you've done festivals with them or whatever, but are there artists that you've kind of bonded with as well?
Yeah, I mean, my collaborators, Vic and Black, for sure, are like that to me. Black is an insane writer and so connected to his spirit. He's a Cancer like me. I think, like I said, SZA's someone that I really admire as a songwriter. I think that she does an incredible job of articulating her experience and her pain and her joy and her confusion with life and just her experience. And I really love that about her. Kali Uchis as well does that. I think she's a sick songwriter, like just in the way that she expresses herself and tells her story. I don't know. Yeah, I think that they're contemporaries of mine. Kehlani, I think, does the same. They're contemporaries of mine that are like friends of mine that I think are really just talented in that regard of like being able to articulate. Janae Aiko as well, I think I would add to that list. And Summer, like I said, Summer Walker, I think she's really talented. Like her penmanship and just the way that she articulates her reality and her feelings. And that's what's important to me when it comes to listening to this music.
Well, it's funny because also look, right? You came from a band. From a group. So you have that sort of built-in camaraderie. And what I was getting at in terms of the contemporaries is, like, I think about if I'm interviewing Jerry Cantrell from Alice in Chains and, you know, that whole Seattle scene, there was a real camaraderie among that. You know, all those artists were friends, although people always want there to be a rivalry. The reality is that, you know, or you go back to the LA, like, punk alternative scene of the 80s. And, like, I was just talking with Belinda Carlisle from the Go-Go's, like, 2 weeks ago. And she was talking about the friendship with the Bengals. So for you, is it nice to come out in your own as a solo artist, but at the same time, have that sort of support group of people that you, other artists that you can talk with that inspire you? And again, as an artist, you always just get to learn from anybody that you work with. And again, I know that you and Vic did a talk together. And when you work with anybody, you get to draw from that experience.
100%. I think 100%. Yeah, I think that it's a half and half street, I feel like. I feel like there's a lot of competition in this day and age. amongst people, like that kind of prevents like genuine friendships from forming sometimes. I think that's definitely happened to me with a few people. But I also think that, I think friendships evolve as you actually genuinely get to know folks, you know, like I think a lot of the conversations and interactions that happen are like online nowadays. And that's what people see. And that's what people think is real. But like, you know, the in-person is what matters, at least to me personally. And people can move real funny in this business, to be honest, but but that doesn't mean that I haven't met some incredible people, even if we're not close like that yet.
All right. Well, I always want to talk positive as opposed to negative. So are there one or two artists that you've spoken with or that you've known over the years that, that have inspired you the most, that you've learned from watching them or getting to talk with them? And it's funny because what you say about people can be real funny mm-hmm. in this business. What's interesting about it, I found early on working in this, is the higher up you get, the more successful you get, and the less you have to prove, the cooler you are. And so the nicest person I've ever met in music, Stevie Wonder. Stevie is the coolest person in the world. And I've always joked with, and in fact, Janelle Monáe, and not to name drop, but I just talked to a shit ton of people, but we talked about this. It's like the Stevie rule of music. Unless you've written songs in the key of life or inner visions, you can't be a dick because you've never written anything as good mm-hmm. as Stevie. And then he's managed to do it while being cool. So are there those artists that you've gotten to be around that have inspired you with the fact that they just carry themselves like they belong? They're not trying to prove anything. They're not trying to impress you because they're not worried about competition.
Yeah, definitely. I think Anderson .Paak is one of those people for me. Andy's like a good friend of mine and like has always been just really cool and real and like just like has always like acknowledged my gifts, you know, and like respects me as an artist, you know. And so that's been really cool. I think Ty as well, when him and I were together, he taught me a lot and he took me under his wing a lot. Even if it was subconscious in his reality, like for me, just like watching him work and be the savant that he is and his talent and seeing his work ethic just really taught me a lot vicariously. And he's just cool. Like he just knows who he is and does what he does, you know? I think Alicia Keys, I was in a writing session with her one time and seeing her in her vulnerability and her rawness and her process was really inspiring to me because I admire her so much as a songwriter and as an artist, and seeing her in her process and being able to write with her and like and just see that part of the process is imperfection and finding it. You know, I was so rigid at the time before I was in that session, I was rigid about like it needing to be perfect before somebody could hear it, or it needing to be a really good melody in order for me to like even suggest it, you know, like that fear of failure, that fear of it sounding bad and people thinking that I'm not talented because of that, you know, like just that like needing to prove thing in the brain. But I just learned a lot about that from that experience as well. It's just like relaxing into like the truth of who you are and knowing that even if you're imperfect, the perfection comes from exploring that imperfection, you know?
No, absolutely. So are there one or two, and we'll make these last couple questions on the album, but are there one or two moments on Prelude, like those imperfect moments that it's funny. So that's what I was saying about surprises, but, and actually comes bringing it full circle to the Halloween costumes and how you can spend months preparing and then be like, oh shit, now I need an impromptu costume. And then they become equal. Are there one or two like moments of imperfection on Prelude that you look at now and be like, all right, back in 2019, if I would have put this album out, I would not have been confident enough to put this out in this format. But now I'm more comfortable with who I am as, and look, the reality is, as you get older as a person, you always get more comfortable. Every year that you get older, you get more comfortable with who 100%. You are. 100%.
I think I've always been comfortable with who I am. I think it's just been a matter of like peeling away the layers that were put on top of me of who I am, like the perception of who I am because of having been in the girl group that was manufactured on a TV show. You know, like people have a presumption or an expectation of what you can offer as an individual artist. And so moving through those perceptions, I think, was a big thing for me through the writing process. But I've always known what I wanted to say. It's just that no one ever thought I could say it. You know what I'm saying? So it's been more of that for me. But I think Colors is one of those songs that like I wrote in like 30 minutes. And in like my friend Johnny, who's the producer, like in his apartment, in his, like in a closet, you know what I'm saying? Like, and it was just impromptu because I connected with his music, he connected with my voice, and we just did it, you know, and it just was. And it wasn't glitz and glammy to get it done. It was just really raw, actually, to get it done. And I think of that in comparison to like, you know, something like Scattered, which was more, you know, Oak is more of like a pop producer, R&B producer, and he's like really well seasoned in this industry. And so like sessions with him are much more like diligent, you know what I'm saying? They're not as, I mean, they're still free flowing, but like there's a different level of professionalism to the process, I guess, is what I mean. Not to say that Johnny isn't professional, but just like the experience of it was different in terms of that. But both songs to me, like they come one after the other because they connect with each other, you know, because that self that I am is the contingent, is the through line string, you know?
Yeah. All right. Well, I know we got to wrap up in a second, so let's make this last question. I know you're doing, well, I'm going to center this to LA because I'm based in LA, but Tarragon Ballroom, yeah. December 1st. Now the album's been out for almost a month. You get to play songs from Prelude Live. And look, when you come on stage, songs change. As soon as you come on stage, they change because artists hear them in different ways. So, I mean, fans hear them in different ways and make them their own. So what are the moments from this record that you are most excited to do live and do them in front of an audience and see how audiences respond to songs off Prelude?
Ooh, I mean, honestly, I'm just excited all around for the experience of feeling people in front of me while I sing again. But I am really looking forward to singing Scattered live. I'm looking forward to just feeling the crowd feel their feelings out with me, you know, for their own reasons. I think that's one of the most magical things about music is that it's a frequency and it enters people's bodies, whether they know it or not. You know what I'm saying? The words enter your subconscious, even if you don't know it. And the, like you said about like the protest songs, like when you were younger, you didn't even know, but you were vibing to them. And as you get older, you understand the gravity of the lyric. So like, I'm excited to feel that and the, and see whoever it is that it inspires, you know?
Yeah. Cool. What do you want to add I didn't ask you about?
I don't know. I think those are good questions.
Thanks. I have done this once or twice.
Yeah, right? Just a couple times.
Yeah. No, it's a great pleasure to get to talk to you. I'm glad we got to do this. And I will see you in LA December 1st. And congratulations on the record. Oh, wait. You know what? I should ask, since we talked about this, Friday, November 5th, where will you be when the record actually comes out?
Ooh, well, on November 4th, I'm having like a little party to celebrate the release. So I'm going to be there until midnight and hear it. That'll be my November 5th celebration probably. The next day, I'll probably just do a self-care day and just be at the beach listening to the project.
Okay, wait. Now, two questions on this, because this is fascinating to me. Because, again, I'm old enough to remember when record release was such a big deal. And you actually go to the physical record store to do it. And it was exciting. So, wait. Okay, first of all, take me through the party. How do you celebrate? Like, what's the food there? Like, is it a big party? Is it just, like, close friends? Like, this is a huge deal for you. So, how do you properly celebrate this?
Yeah, it's family and friends and, like, industry folks and friends that I've made along the way there. It's going to be intimate. It's not like going to be like too crazy large. Cause I'm not a big, like, woo, large party type bitch. I like intimate gatherings where I can, like, the music is soft enough that we don't have to be yelling at each other, you know, like to talk.
Yeah.
That's what I'm into. I don't know what the food is going to be giving actually, cause I'm not 100% planning it. Hopefully it's good food. That's what I know. Like at least, I'm sure it'll be amazing. And then there'll be weed.
Okay. The record comes out. It's midnight, although, you know, yeah. So midnight, right?
Mm-hmm.
Thinking of it as like New Year's Eve. How do you toast? What's the drink of choice to toast the record being out?
Oh, what's the drink of choice? You know, it's interesting because I'm having this interesting relationship with alcohol lately where like, my body doesn't want it or like it. And it's like, it's not really what I want to be drinking right now. So I don't know. I probably will have water or sparkling cider personally on Friday, but there'll definitely be champagne and I might have a champagne glass, probably like a flute, probably a flute.
All right. And then the next day, take me through the self-care day.
Ooh.
What do you do for self-care day?
My self-care day will probably consist of me doing some yoga in the morning at this little cute spot that I found that's right next to the beach. And then I'll go to the beach and thank the ocean because the ocean and I have a beautiful little relationship and I love her. And I'll give them an offering, probably like some flowers, and just sit and listen to the music and just be in the sun. And then I'll probably like take a bath, get a massage, you know, do that kind of thing and then make myself some yummy food and go to sleep.
That sounds like a good 24 hours to celebrate the release.
Yeah. Celebrate myself, you know?
Yeah, you've worked a long time. I mean, 2018 to 2021, you've worked a long time to get to this point. So yeah, I'm glad also though too, you are able to put it in perspective and enjoy it.
Thank you. Yeah. I am going to enjoy it. I'm proud of myself and I'm going to sit in that energy.
Well, you know, look, I've talked about this with so many artists too, and it's something when you actually get to appreciate it, It means so much more than like, because at that point, no matter what the response is, it's already a success.
Exactly. I literally, honestly, like the fact that I know that this is coming out, everything's done and it's ready to go and it's in the canon and people just are going to hear it soon. Like I feel so at peace, you know?
Cool. Well, that's a good wrap up note. So a great pleasure to talk to you and congratulations on Prelude.
Thank you.
Thanks. Have a good one.
Bye, love.
Hey, this is Steve Balton and you've been listening to My Turning Point with Lauren Jarecki. Thanks.
If you're a parent with cancer, you're probably worried that your child is feeling scared, sad, or alone when all you want is for them to just feel like a kid. Camp Kesem is a free week-long overnight camp for children ages 6 to 18 who have a parent facing cancer and was created for kids like yours to have a joyful and empowering summer. Kids have a blast together enjoying camp activities surrounded by a compassionate community of friends. Register your child for a free life-changing adventure at kesem.org/camp.
If you look around, there are so many ways to make a difference. At Capella University, our FlexPath format gives you a different way to earn your degree. Take courses at your speed. Move on whenever you're ready. Education should fit your life. Learn more at capella.edu.